We're after your help too. Security footage of a paedophile disguised as a school. He's been getting away with it in Sheffield for 12 years. Do you know him? Have you seen him? Please call.
Yes, we must catch that man. He really is a shit.
And welcome to Rangers Radio. It's Tuesday the 9th of April 2013. We've got a packed show for you tonight. There are many, many good reasons why you didn't get a show last week. But it's all better now. I keep saying that. This is the third show. There's always a two-week gap between the shows, but it really is loads easier to do now. I've got more bits and pieces lined in. I don't have to muck about with post-production anymore, which was very, very old school. Probably about the first three episodes of Rangers Radio, back when we were doing it all the time, had the problems that we've had on the last couple of shows. But now we have two computers. Ooh. And everything's feeding in, it's all on a standard mix. So we're going to get on with the show with some news, if I can pull up the thing here. It's a problem with having only, you know, I really need a secretary, I need someone pushing the buttons on this. Right, I thought I'd start off with a board member leaving a football club because the new manager is a fascist, but not a racist. David Miliband, who was brother of Ed Miliband, one of the party political leaders in the UK, stepped down after a hugely successful manager, Paolo Di Canio, declared his political leanings and is confused with the BNP and EDL members at Sunderland FC. Now, the British National Party and the English Defence League are, you know, major racists. They're not, I wouldn't even call them fascists because they're not out to make the country a better place or anything. They're just into sort of keeping other people out of, you know, anybody that's not from here can't stay here, which is ridiculous in the UK because everybody's from somewhere else. I think the only person I've ever met that vaguely looks like they should be here is Nir Demi. And he's short and brown curly hair. He looks like he's supposed to be here. But anybody else, if you've got blue eyes and you've got any other colour or type of hair than brown and curly, then you ain't meant to be here. However, Paolo Di Canio actually sort of said he was fascist in the true sort of Roman sense of the term, which because he's Italian, you know, and somebody said, what are your political reasons? He's mentioned fascism because the Romans were the archetypes of fascism. In fact, the symbol for one of the symbols for the Roman Empire, and in fact it's actually on the dollar bill and on the seal of the United States, is the rods and the axe, which is basically, you know, the idea of that symbol is that the axe was justice and the bundle of rods was society, and all of society would enact justice on behalf of all of society, and that the bundle of rods was impossible to break, which is the idea of fascism, is in society sort of like is binds together and produces an environment that everybody wants to live in. So I can sort of understand it. The poor sod, you know, doesn't understand that people in this country only see fascism as Nazism, which is not the case. And I thought it was really interesting that somebody can't be honest about their political leanings and say I am this without a whole bunch of really stupid people sort of like going, oh, I don't understand. You know, I was talking to Iron Angel on the IRC a while back about sort of, you know, the fact that we couldn't use the term anarchy anymore. Like, you'd have to invent a new brand of anarchy so that you could explain it to people without everybody freaking out. And it's amazing. I just thought it was very, very interesting that, you know, certain words like hacker and anarchist, you know, even freedom fighter is a bit dodgy, and activist, have now been branded in the public's subconscious so that they can only see certain things when you say those words. Because I got a load of hate at the local amateur radio club for mentioning that I considered myself a bit of a hacker, and everybody just completely lost their shit. Now, rather than thinking hacker as in someone that finds new solutions with existing technology or whatever, or tries to do interesting things with stuff that they're supplied with, they all assumed that I meant a malevolent computer hacker that was going to take away all their personal information and steal their credit card number. And it took me weeks. I mean, these guys are hackers. They build their own radio transmitters and Morse code keys and shit like that. And they are all hackers, and they just could not, even after patient explanation and me really walking them through it, they just couldn't understand the idea of the term. And that sort of thing will bug you. I mean, you know, sort of like it will follow you around, you know, like the term survivalist. It just refers to someone that's interested in their own survival, whereas you say the word survivalist, and in most parts of the world, people are going to think of someone with a bunker full of guns, you know, and 4 years' worth of food, who's going to kill anybody that comes near them should the end come. So I thought that was an interesting thing. So you've got a political figure who really, really didn't have time you know, to sort of be a board member of Sunderland FC, and it was only a board member of Sunderland FC because it put him in touch with his constituents. Stepping down, apart from the fact he's off to America, so he like used this guy's minor quote as a reason he was leaving the board, so he didn't look like he was deserting his ex-constituents. And interestingly, Dave Miliband's dad was a communist, an actual communist, a member of the Communist Party, and he's moving to America. So he's just making political hay or something, you know. So if you're listening and you're part of the TSA, you know, just expand the communism question. You know, are you now or have you ever been a member of the Communist Party? Say, has any of your family or any of your family now a member of the Communist Party? We'll see where that gets you. That'd be good fun if you fancy getting into the news. I'm mentioning this story just to prove a point and to give us an interesting quote. I mean, and I think it's very rangery. I mean, this is why we didn't go with sort of anarchists or something like that. And while I was sort of, you know, chatting with Iron Angel on the IRC, we came up with a term that might help you out here. I don't know whether it's going to be any useful to you. Scalable competence. As opposed to anarchy, you know. And even competence is one of those things that people can't get their heads around quite, you know. I mean, I got some hassle at the last Halloween when, you know, somebody asked me what I'd come as. And I was just hanging out because they have a big Halloween party here. So you can't get away from people trick-or-treating. And I just looked him dead in the eye. And I was wearing black combat trousers and a black T-shirt and, you know. And I just said, I've come as competence. This is what it looks like. And that didn't go down too well. Because you're basically saying people are incompetent. And I have to say, it's pretty much the case. I reckon about 98% of all the people you'll meet in a given day are incompetent. You know, they're not capable of looking after themselves. They're not capable of doing much on their own behalf. And, you know, I just never, ever got it. I never got that people could just sort of like take such umbrage. You know, you're just wanting to be, you know, a solid human being. You know, by the fact that you're competent, it implies that they're incompetent. So, yeah, I am pretty amazed at the whole thing. You know, the guy said he was a fascist, and he tried to explain it. And even in his autobiography, he sort of just says, I don't agree with human rights abuses. I don't, you know, I believe that the Holocaust actually happened. I'm not a neo-fascist. I believe in the ideals of fascism, which was very interesting and very brave of him. But I don't think he realised how brave it was until he came into contact with all the fucking idiots that are out there. Anyway, a little side bit of news, because I didn't log down any details about it, but Novartis is a major drug company in the third world, and was blocked and totally slapped down in the Indian High Court for trying to sue a generic drug company that was making virtually free versions of its anti-cancer drugs. The India High Court refused the drug company's copyright claim, pointing out that generic drugs are the only way the majority of Indians poor can get state-sponsored medicine for cancer and other diseases. So it's like the Indians are like pushing that whole thing, and they've got this whole thing where they don't believe in intellectual copyright. You know, but it would be nice if sort of like there was a system where if you produce something that was useful to the world, then you would get like just a one-off paycheck from the countries that wanted to use it that was an equivalent certain sum from each country. You know, say it's America and you get like $1 million, and then in the UK, because it's a poorer country with less population, you get like $300,000, and India, because it's skint a lot of the time, although it's doing really, really well, India's like the next China, really, because it's really kicking off over there, and there's some inventive people over there, so I reckon India will be the next rising economy to actually kick everybody's ass at manufacturing and shit. But India would give you say £100,000, and all the African countries would get away with a token gesture of money. So you'd still be wealthy for inventing something that everybody wanted to use, but it would be fair, and it would be a one-off payment, because the world could effectively say to you as a group of people, right, this is a useful piece of design, a useful invention, or a useful drug, and we're going to buy it off you, and you go away, here's some money, and this should give you enough money to invent the next drug, or at least seed it into a company that will invent the next drug. And this way the world could sort of like, you know, agree on like a level of intellectual copyright that would be worldwide. And you could do that for all sorts of things that weren't actually, you know, if it was an important book or an important idea or an important film, the world, you know, intellectual property bunch could buy it, and then it would be copyright free. And then everybody could produce DVDs of your movie or produce copies of your book because it was so important that everybody should have it. Wouldn't that be nice? Anyway, I get distracted. That's why I reported on that story, because I big up to the Indian High Court for just telling those people to fuck off. You know, and it's not like they didn't get money for it. It's just that their patent expired. And they wanted to renew it. They wanted to change Indian law to suit a corporation, and bless them, totally amazing, they decided not to. Anyway, in B News, thanks to Juva, who sent me an enormous pile of links. I mean, it really is. It's like 3 A4 pages of all sorts of links. So I'm going to paste them out. So Juva, thanks very much. And I'm going to rather cheekily use your links for about the next 3 or 4 shows, because you just sent me an enormous amount of links. And that's like top homework. A+, mate, for producing that. In B News, scientists have long known that flying insects gain an electrical charge when they buzz around. That charge, typically positive, accumulates as the wings zip through the air, much as electrical charge accumulates on a person shuffling across a carpet. And because an insect's exoskeleton has a waxy surface that acts as an electrical insulator, that charge isn't easily displaced, even when the insect lands on objects, says Randolph Menzel, a neurobiologist at the Free University of Berlin in Germany. And you might remember that name, because they come up a lot. They're very cool. Although researchers have suspected for decades that such electrical fields aid pollination by helping the tiny grains stick to insects visiting a flower, only more recently have they investigated how insects sense and respond to such fields. Just last month, for example, a team reported that bumblebees may use electrical fields to identify flowers recently visited by other insects. From those that may still hold lucrative stores of nectar and pollen, a flower that a bee had recently landed on might have an altered electrical field, the researchers speculated. Now, in a series of lab tests, Menzel and his colleagues have studied how honeybees respond to electrical fields. In experiments conducted in small chambers with conductive walls, they isolated the bees from external electrical fields. The researchers showed that a small electrically charged wand brought close to a honeybee can cause its antenna to bend. Other tests using antenna removed from honeybees indicated that electrically induced deflections triggered reactions in a group of sensory cells called the Johnston's organ, located near the base of the antenna. Yet in other experiments, honeybees learned that sugary reward was available when they detected a particular pattern of electrical field. The team's findings are very significant, says Fred Dyer, a behavioural biologist at Michigan State University in East Lansing. I hadn't heard about the possibility that honeybees could use electrical fields. One of the honeybees' form of communication is the waggle dance. When insects have located a dense patch of flowers or a source of water, they skitter across the honeycomb in their hive in a pattern related to the direction and the distance to the site. Fellow worker bees then take that information and footage accordingly. The biggest mystery about the dance, Dyer says, is which senses the bees use. Often in the deep dark recess of their hive to conduct their communication, people have proposed a variety of methods. Direct contact between bees, air currents from the buzzing of their wings, odour, even vibrations transmitted through the honeycomb itself, he says. But the team's new findings introduce yet another mode of communication available to the insects. Dyer says that he notes that the group found antenna deflections induced by an electrical charge honeybee wing are about 10 times the size of those that would be caused by airflow from a wing fluttering at the same distance, a sign that electrical fields could be an important signal. They show that the electrical fields are there and that they're within range of what the animal can sense, Dyer says. Their claim of evidence is quite compelling. And that's really interesting, and I know it sounds like a very small thing, and I'm pretty sure Juva, the reason that he sent me that is that if we can induce bees to pollinate some plants and not others, we can make the bees that you do have in an area much more sort of farm productive. I mean, we're already take the piss out of the bees a little bit in that we harvest honey from them, but we really do need them to pollinate all these plants, and they're the one sort of controllable insect that we can use to do that. I mean, lots of other things like wasps and that, and do all that, and pollinate plants and all that. It links into another interesting story that was on Radio 4 a little while, and I'm coming back to the Radio 4 thing. In California, they actually forcibly migrate billions of bees around California to get all the fruit and vegetables pollinated. But if you could sort of like create an electrical field that would be attractive to the bees, you could stop them pollinating sort of like wildflowers and stuff like that, make them concentrate on the bees. Now, I don't know whether that would, pardon me, create a monoculture, or whether it would be a bit of a problem. But that is very, very interesting stuff. I mean, the more we can find out about bees and the more we can protect them, the more useful they are. I mean, I fully intend to keep bees at some point in my life because they are just so fantastically useful. Ah, the sound of a cigarette lighter clicking. That's a total Rangers radio sound, isn't it? I mean, it's worse when me and Graffin are here because we both smoke. So it's constantly clicking around. And I am sat here in my new sort of like rip-downable studio in the caravan with my mixing desk and the laptop and the PC all recording away. And I've got my coffee in my Rangers cup that's thanks to Mew. And I'm sitting here with good coffee and cigarettes and plenty of news and loads of links. You've all been really good this week. I've had loads of cool stuff. Moving on. A specialist school is under investigation for setting up the controlled self-harm policy to allow a teenage pupil to cut herself with razor blades. Irritatingly enough, this is one of those news stories I found, and then after going back and checking Juva's news links, because it was a lot, it was actually on there. So this is also thanks to Juva. Teachers were told to give the female pupil access to a sterilised Bic safety razor blades and escort her to the bathroom where she could cut herself. They were ordered to wait outside the bathroom while the child was inside, checking on her every 2 minutes before the wounds were dressed and cleansed by staff. The policy is understood to have been designed by the school in collaboration with the pupil's mother. However, it was abandoned after 5 days after several members of staff protested and complained to the local authority. Unstead Park School in Godalming, Surrey, offers education to boys and girls aged between 7 and 19 years who have Asperger's syndrome and higher functioning autism. Principal Steve Dempsey and head teacher Laura Blair now face the possibility of being brought before a teaching agency hearing over allegations of unacceptable professional conduct. A spokeswoman for the Priory Group, which is responsible for running the school, the Priory Group is a bit like the Betty Ford Clinic where celebrities go and dry out, said that both Surrey County Council and Ofsted, the school's regulator, had investigated the concerns but took no further action. She said this was a short-term local procedure introduced by the head teacher and school principal who genuinely believed it was in the interest of the pupil. However, they accept the procedure should not have been implemented without further approvals having been obtained from key stakeholders and senior management prior to its introduction. The case is being reviewed by the teaching agency, which took over from the General Teaching Council last year. A panel will decide whether any further action will be taken. A spokeswoman from charity selfharm.co.uk said controlled self-harm have been proven to be effective in some areas under correct supervision. But she added that she would be deeply concerned if a school were trying to manage such a scheme. Taking it away from them without replacing it with something else can actually bring a desperate kind of depression that could make them slide from self-harm to having suicidal ideation. Okay, she said. The fuck's ideation? Unstead Park School was ranked good with outstanding features in its last Ofsted inspection published in February. The report said there are robust risk assessments and health safety procedures which protect young people from harm. The behaviour management system at the school is outstanding. Boarders have individual behaviour plans which operate on a traffic light system and clearly identify triggers and strategies for addressing these. A spokesman for the teaching agency said they are unable to comment on ongoing investigations. That's fucked up. You know, so you've got a system where you've got someone with the need to self-harm, which I understand a lot of people get it. And I have experienced the need to self-harm. The weird fascination with, if you feel your life is out of control, harming yourself because that's the bit you can get to. It's messed up. It is messed up when you start to do it and you get into this weird sort of clinical depression. And it happened to me when I was about 17. So I do know of what these people speak. However, I am a big believer in just, you know, someone having a single, decent, reliable person to speak to that is just utterly reliable, that you can properly trust, to just look at you and go, no, that's fucked up. You need to chill out. You need to sit down and have a fag and have a cup of coffee and tell me how come your life is so uncontrollable that you need to get this tiny measure of control. I don't know whether you can do that with Asperger's or autistic kids, and I think it's an easy label that's been sort of foisted on to, you know, a lot of children these days, that they've got high functioning autism or something like that. And I would say I recently watched rewatched a film called Girl Interrupted with Angelina Jolie and Oh, what's her name? She was in Alien 4, and she was also in Heathers. Winona Ryder. And it was really good, but it was made even better, because that deals with a lot of self-harm and a lot of, you know, people being fucked up and paranoid and stuff. But it was even better when I found out it was a true story. So that's probably should go on the Recommedia. Go and see Girl Interrupted, or see if you can grab it online or on YouTube or something. Anyway, you know, this is, generally speaking, most people get out of control because they feel everybody they know is connected to their problems and won't understand or will have their own viewpoint. And, you know, there is a bit in Stranger in a Strange Land where they have this concept of sort of like registered witnesses, and they call fair witnesses, and once they put on a cloak they have to be absolutely truthful about what they perceive, but they also have to be very, very honest about it. So there's an interesting example where the guy says to the fair witness, what do you see over there? And she says, I see a house, and the side of it that points towards me is white. She doesn't say it's a white house, because she can't be sure of that. She can only sort of say the side that's pointing towards me is white. And if you just sort of like had fair witnesses all over the place, people that once they donned their particular badge, told nothing but the truth, however the chips fall, and they could be trained to do this, I think they'd be a rather useful bit in society. Right. And has anything more interesting happened this week? Yes, in the news, Margaret Thatcher's died. Now, it's probably all over the news, and everybody on Earth is trying to sort of say what a wonderful person she was. And some people are, you know, basically saying she was an evil person that did a lot of terrible things. Now, I am going to step out on a limb right now. And in the fairest, balanced way I can say it, although it's an extreme example, Margaret Thatcher, as far as I can tell, was literally pretty endemic of all cult of personality type people. You know, from Kim Il-jung to Adolf Hitler to Stalin to, you know, all those people that get a massive following. In that, they start off by doing things that they can defend. From their standpoint, it was good. She made it possible for people in this country to buy council houses. She made it possible for people to buy their own shares and stuff like that. And she truly believed that individuals should be responsible for their own destiny. Now, before you freak out and say, oh, but V, you're talking bollocks again. You're basically saying that this fascist person took over and did all these terrible things. And yes, she did go to war over the coal mines and stuff like that. And I wouldn't say that the whole purchase of council houses and the purchase of shares was a good thing. You know, in retrospect, when you look at it, you can see that it was a pretty stupid thing to do, because all of a sudden the UK has no real heavy industry. The UK has no real stock of council homes. So, you know, you've got no chance putting yourself on a council housing list and getting anything but a single bedroom flat or a studio flat somewhere in a crappy area with a private landlord. So you've got two landlords to deal with, essentially. You've got the local council, who you've got to persuade every so often that you do need the housing benefit to pay for your rent, and you've got the landlord that's always bugging you about this and that. So it's not as good as a council house, in which council will generally leave you alone. So, you know, so these things, if you explain them in a certain way, would sound like they were really great. You know, you could say Margaret Thatcher sold off all the heavy industry and major transportation links in this country. But on the flip side of that, you could say that she allowed the people of this country to take ownership. Now, unfortunately, if you want to see this going really wrong, you just look at the newly sort of separated Russia, when it separated from all its satellite things, and they sold off their heavy industry to people, they just gave away shares to the people, which was better than Margaret Thatcher's idea on the face of it. You know, everybody gets a share of every heavy industry in the Soviet Union, so people all got these share certificates. The bad thing is that Russia's economy at the time was in a massive freefall, and so all the poor people in Russia sold all their share certificates for like 1% of their value, and people would hoover up all these shares in all these national assets. And then you get the oligarchs, you know, people that own everything in Russia, and you've essentially got a new feudal system, which is kind of what happened here. Because if you look at the, between the 1970s and the 1990s, economically in the UK, the rich have got richer and the poor have got much, much poorer. And you've got this point where people won't pay a decent rate for a day's work, or a commensurate amount. And I'm not talking communism here. I'm just talking a fair amount, something that people can live on for working, say, 40 hours a week. You know, so if you're working 40 hours a week, you should reasonably be able to rent a house that you feel comfortable in, go out a few times a week, get a takeaway, pay all your bills, get all your food and save some money, or go towards buying a house. But you can't really do that in the UK anymore. I mean, at least thank all the powers that be, or all the decisions that people have made, that there is a minimum wage in this country, so you can't be truly screwed. And you've got, if you compare the minimum wage, let's say 160 hours a month at minimum wage, and then you try and work out how you would pay for your accommodation, your council tax, your bills, and money to eat and stuff, you cannot afford to live on a minimum wage job in this country. Whereas you can afford to live on benefits. You know, so if it is one of those very, very, very weird things that you almost can't afford to live on a job. And if you screw up your finances like I did when I was living in a house, you can have quite a good job and you can try and buy a house and you still won't have very much money left over to you at the end of the month. In fact, the very weird thing is that if you're on Job Seekers Allowance, which is the standard benefit, which is £71 or about $100 a week, it actually works out more disposable income for food and stuff than I had when I was earning £28,000 a year as an IT engineer and trying to buy a house and pay child support and pay my council tax. You know, so theoretically, if I didn't have to pay rent here and I was on Job Seekers Allowance, I would actually be better off than when I was working. So that's when it gets a bit fucked up. Anyway, rant over. Interesting thing, Margaret Thatcher dead. A load of people. I mean, there were the thing is she's getting essentially a state funeral where everybody's going to be all somber and say nice things about her. But at the same time, in probably one of the best political sort of diversity displays of all time, there have been street parties in Glasgow and Bristol and Brixton and places like that where they've actually been celebrating in the streets yesterday. And all these sort of old Tory MPs are going, oh, that's in very bad taste. It's like, well, don't fuck up our country. At least they didn't do a massive U-turn and do the whole Jade Goody thing or the whole Princess Diana thing where, you know, people were ambivalent towards her before they died and then everybody was calling her a saint or anything like that. So my faith in humanity has been restored by the balance that's been left, and people have been quite happy to be on radio and TV and say she bloody destroyed our lives. And I don't think it was down to her. I don't think, you know, anything in history is down to one person ever. But, you know, that's the way stuff goes. Anyway, Margaret Thatcher dead. 20 years ago, I'd have been dancing in the street. But now, really, I think that an awful lot of any country's problems is down to how people deal with it and down to how involved people are. So you could argue I'm a bit of a fascist. So I probably won't get a job as a manager of any football clubs anytime soon. Anyway, we're going into the halftime music. Thank you very much for bearing with my ranting. Halftime music is entirely thanks to Kevin Is A Geek. We're going to start off with... Let's see, Oh, and I've messed it up, so you're going to have to wait for a little bit. The Daily Express song. And another song called You're a Wanker. So, you know, the thing with Rangers Radio is if you send it in, I will play it. We don't have any censorship apart from things that are based on racism or homophobia or anything like that. So if you send it in to me, I will play it. And I'm so short of music at the moment, so whatever you send, I will endeavour to play. So, and the background music is by Iron Angels Band. And I'll tell you what it's called when I fire it up. See, it's all interlinked. It's all playing live. I'm having to do quite a bit. And this is called RPM 13 Thumper Demo, which is available at alonetone.com. So look up Iron Angel at alonetone.com and you too can grab some groovy music. So he said I could use it and all that. So we're going to start off with You're a Wanker and Daily Express. So we'll be back in about 6 minutes.
Everybody's got a Daily Express point of view. Everybody thinks the world is out to get them and they think it through. Common sense kicks in and the intelligent among us see the truth through the dim, but everybody else still gets the Daily Express. I've got this theory and I hypothesize. As brains get input, there's a moment in time when people instantly are all of our mind. But that's quite
saturated with the horrors of news. Your mind is saturated, weak and confused. It's black and white, simplicity is the fuse. And the easy is to blame, get blamed. Everybody's got a daily express point of view. Everybody thinks the world is out to get them and they think it through. And common sense kicks in and the intelligence among us see the truth through the tin. But everybody else still gets the daily express. After 4 seconds then clarity comes. Judgments are pitted, balance earlier ones. That the solution wasn't really well done. But some people are left behind. And they're the people who will never atone. They've got opinions solidly set in stone. They've got ideas that are molded from foam. And they're the readers of the Daily Express. Cause everybody's got a Daily Express point of view. Everybody thinks the world is out to get them and they think it through. And common sense kicks in and the intelligence among us see the truth through the tin. But everybody else still gets the Daily Express. The immediate rush is that imbalance push that they think without thinking in your thoughts. The blitz is the page of newspapers today. If we can, I pick any opinion at all. It's the ultimate plan, it's a measure of plan to accept that things don't get resolved in a flash. And if after some time you accept that the thing in your mind that feeds by the Daily Express. When you're confronted with the horrors of news, your mind is saturated, bleak and confused. It's black and white, simplicity is the fuse. And the easy is to blame, get blamed. Everybody's got a Daily Express point of view. Everybody thinks the world is out to get them and they think it through. And common sense kicks in and the intelligence among us see the truth through the tin. But everybody else still gets the Daily Express. But everybody else still gets the Daily Express.
This job is not my ceilings or walls. It's not
And we're back. So that was You're a Wanker and Daily Express song, both by the Attery Squash. Thanks very much to Kev is a Geek. So, we're now into the discussion portion of the show, which is never really a discussion, it's more me blaring on. However, I'm hoping highly that we can tempt Graffin to have a bit of a discussion tomorrow and maybe talk about ham radios or something like that, which is his latest passion. And maybe we'll mention things like, oh, I don't know, where's all our footage? Can't give him too much grief. He's working many, many hours more than I am. I mean, I should be able to produce a show every day with the amount of things. So if you want me to produce loads and loads and loads of more shows, I need more stuff. Please send all your links, emails, stories, music, everything to v4v at earthling.net. That's me being super trusting, isn't it? V4v, that's letter V, number 4, letter V, at earthling.net. And we'll try and get it on the show, because this is your show. It only comes together because of the stuff you send me. Right, we're going to go into the discussion. It's mostly what's been happening at the Rangers HQ, which is now a very ratty, very small caravan in the same place where I had my TP. But it's proven a lot more effective because I've got a hell of a lot more desk space. And if you see, it's sort of like the big table that's sort of like between the two seats in the caravan. There's loads of stuff plugged into it. Okay, so thanks very much to Avagdu, who posted on the website forum for discussion, and you know, to and he posted more 100 heroes, because I thought it'd be a really cool idea to see if we can get like a group consensus of absolute heroes, and then maybe either put a book together or get in touch with the ones that are still alive or the estates of the ones that are dead. And interestingly, everything I put on my 100 heroes, apart from about two, was on Avagdu's list. Surprisingly, the big, you know, people like Ayn Rand, Ian Banks, Robert Heinlein, big philosophers and stuff like that. But interestingly, the one person that's been mega mean to Avagdu, as in Stefan Molyneux of the Anarchist Radio Show, he actually put him on his heroes site. So big up to you. Though there was like a really long list of Avagdu stuff, and I didn't, to be honest, I felt a bit stupid as soon as I saw his list, because he didn't explain who they were. So about a third of them, I didn't know who the hell these people were. But, you know, I want you to go and have a look at that on the forums and see if you can add anything or do your own list of 100 heroes, and we'll see if we can get that project off the ground, because that'd be cool. Right, as far as the moving on to the caravan stuff, the caravan is relatively tidy. The teepee's come down now. I've had to level off all the ground underneath it. And, yeah, that was pretty unpleasant. I had to throw away the teepee because it was slowly falling apart. Loads of things wrong with it. Level the ground and throw away tons of crap. And I've had a bit of an issue hooking up the gas, because even though I can't hear any gas hissing out of it, I can smell gas when the cooker's on. So I have to turn the gas on and off when I want to cook. So that's not working too well at the moment, but I do have a plan for sorting that entirely out. Been making ginger beer, which is your own absolute control soft drink if you want to make it. All you need to do is get some brewer's yeast and some water and some sugar and some ginger, however you want it, powdered ginger or grated stem ginger. Put that in a thing and let it sort of like do its thing for about a week, and then it will start bubbling and doing all its thing, because every day for a week you feed it with a teaspoon of sugar and a teaspoon of ginger, and then you pop it in there and it starts bubbling away and doing its thing. So actually it is brewing in a way, but you only need a little pop to do it in. Ideally something that's not going to explode if the gas pressure inside gets up. And then all you do with your little thing of ginger beer, which you refer to as a starter, like sourdough bread, is strain the starter. First you get about a pound of sugar, and then you pour a litre of boiling water on it, and then you put another couple of litres of cold water on it, and then you pour all the water and stuff like that, and anything small enough to go through a sieve into the big bowl. You need about a 5-litre capacity bowl, and mix it up and stuff, and then you just get a jug and pour it into litre bottles or whatever you want to put it in, and just leave it for about a week, and then it becomes fizzy on its own. So it's one of those things where, and the great thing is, you add a little bit of lemon juice to it. And the great thing is, it's a relatively healthy soft drink that's actually quite good for you, because all the ginger, if it's actual ginger, will get into your system and aid your digestion and stuff like that. But you've also got your own sort of like, you know, macrobiotic soft drink. however healthy you think the pound of sugar is. So you, with every litre, you're drinking about a quarter of a pound of sugar down with that. So you've got to take that on your own recognizance, really. And you can add all sorts of flavourings to it. You can add sort of like, you know, squash drinks to it, or any sort of powdered drinks that you want to add to it to give it a different flavour. Or any juices that you want to add to it, because, you know, it's not going to really kill off the yeast before it makes it all bubbly. So that's been very fun, and I've made about 10 litres so far, and tomorrow I'm jugging up the next 5 litres of ginger beer, so that's quite cool. There's more kit online in the studio. I've got the mixing desk with the music system is actually fed by a very, very messed up Toshiba laptop that doesn't have a working mouse, doesn't have a working keyboard, and only has one USB port. So I had to wait till China would send me a powered USB port so I could actually start using it. So that was fairly interesting. So that's now working, and I can actually use that now to sort all that out. So that's kind of cool. So we got like the thing that's handling the music system is an ex-destroyed laptop, which, so that's all running, and that's feeding into the machine that's giving me the recording system and displaying the running order. By the way, do download the running order, because it's got all the links on it if you're interested. And I've got my mobile phone running the background music, so it's kind of clutched together, but it's a lot easier to do it when you know you don't have any post-production. All you've got to do is export the show to MP3 and you're done. So we're reducing the, you know, the time it takes to do a show by a good couple of hours, because it's a massive faff doing it all in post-production. So thank you for bearing with me while we did all that. So yeah, so it's all working, it's all doing its thing, and interestingly, the Toshiba laptop, I think the Toshiba laptop was what I recorded episode 0 on, so that's how long I've had it. That's kind of freaky, isn't it? So yeah, it's kind of interesting that the ultra fucked Toshiba laptop was the thing, you know, and it's still here, you know, 7 or 8 years later, still acting as a key part of the studio, along with the mixing desk, which has been here since day one. Right, I want to just bring up the other thing about Ranged Radios. What could we do more with? What do you want as an audience? Do you want more kit reviews or movie reviews, more news? You've got to let me know how you want to shape the show, because I always intended the whole Rangers thing to be as a bit like Project Mayhem. You're as involved as you want to be, and if you suggest things to me, I will try and incorporate them in the show. I'll do my very best to try it, and if it proves popular, we keep on to it. So I'm hoping to include more external people on the show, you know, so via Skype, and recording more stuff like that. So, you know, do get in touch and do tell me how you'd like the show to change. The final thing for the discussion bit is an idea for after hours. Is there a time limit for the show, or should there be one? Should there be like an after hours section for downloaders? Should we do, you know, should we keep it to a specific time limit? Because we've got all sorts of people that are sort of like rebroadcasting the show. You can get it on Ramp Media, you can get it on Red Osprey Radio, and you should be able to get it on Galaxy 15. So, is there a time limit that you want the standard show to go out to? Is it going to be an hour or an hour and a half or something like that? An hour is easier for me, because it sort of takes the pressure off, because it takes about an hour to get through everything, music and stuff like that. And should we then sort of go, right, you know, if you download it, there's another 30 minutes this week, or if you download it, there's another, you know, 45 minutes or another hour, because we got into the conversation that we were having. So, yeah, so I do need to know, you know, so this will be like DVD extras for people that can be bothered to download it from somewhere like archive.org. So, yeah. Or do you want the extras, the extra bit attached as a secondary file for Mega Rabbit fans? Which might be how we have to do it. We might have to sort of stop recording and then carry on, or we might have to chop out a chunk to get it in under an hour. So you be the judge. So, yeah, remember, is your show... Everybody else puts in, you know, more links than I do. Everybody else finds more news stories. Everybody finds music and stuff like that. So, and I always try and big up all the people that contribute, in, even in a minor way, to the show. Oh, and another thing, I kind of want the, you know, the end of the Sesame Street episode thing, where it dun 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 dun. You know, today's episode was brought to you by A, and the number is 5. You know, I want that piece of music. So if you can find that anywhere and send it to me as an MP3 that I can loop and play while we're doing it, that'd be great. So that's about all I want to say about that this week. So we've now into Recomedia, and there is quite a bit of Recomedia. Well, there's a bit of Recomedia, but there's a lot of links. Tom Tuck's Straight to DVD is a radio show on Radio 4, which is really funny, where he goes into all the really terrible sequels and terrible movies that you'll never see at the cinema but always seem to crop up in your local video rental store or on, you know, eBay or in pound shops or wherever you find DVDs. It's really funny. Go and check it out. It's on Tuesdays, Radio 4 at 6:30. And it was what I was listening to directly before I started recording the show. I was sort of hung on recording the show just so I could do that. Referring to the quote at the beginning of the show, that's actually from Chris Morris's Brass Eye, which was an ITV or a Channel... I think it was a Channel 4 show that's like the harshest satire you'll ever find back in the 80s or 90s, and it's really, you'll be absolutely astounded at how harsh they were about things. Also on Radio 4, Alex Kratowski, who is Uber Babe Girl Geek, has got a series on Radio 4 called Digital Human, and you can catch that on Radio 4 on Mondays at 4:30 in the afternoon. And our book recommendation for the week is Stranger in a Strange Land by Robert A. Heinlein, as mentioned earlier. And if you haven't read it, I thoroughly recommend you go and find it and download it or get it in some paper form if you still can. Okay, our standard links are for www.rangers.com and www.rantmedia.ca. Do get in touch with us via email at v4v@earthling.net, and go into the IRC, which you can get into at webchat.freenode.net, and just type in #rangers R4NGER5 as the channel name, give yourself a funny name, and go in there and chat to the guys. There's nearly always someone in the IRC. Harlequin sent us a link to www.everyday-carry.com, which is EDC sort of like stuff of various people's EDC, which, because it's American, always seems pretty extreme to me. You got these people wandering around with small handguns and shit, and you go, I don't leave the house without my gun. And it's kind of like, it's kind of scary, you know, and you think, I have to sort of like strip out my EDC, because I have to take out anything that's got a blade in it, pretty much, to go to the shops. I mean, I wander around, you know, with a knife usually in my pockets or something, because I need it where I live. But, you know, there's the amount of times you have to sort of like think, oh, I'm going to the shops, do I need a knife? And the answer is probably not in this country. Especially if you look like a ranger. If you're wearing combat boots and combat trousers and stuff like that, and you've got a belt and shit all over it, and you're walking with a purposeful expression, the expression worn by the combatant, where you really don't give a fuck if someone tries to attack you or not, you generally don't tend to get mugged. He also sent us a really funny eBay link. And it's Everyday Carry Zombie 3-Day Survival Disaster Preparedness Kit, 5-Year Storage. And it is the worst prepper kit I've ever seen. It is the prepper kit designed to keep you alive until you're rescued type shit. And we've all seen this crap. And it is the most, it is a wildly useless collection of stuff. It's got like 3 little glow sticks in, a little list of things you should do to deal with survival. It's got a little emergency glass breaking hammer with a seatbelt cutter. You know, it's in this big box, and you're never going to fucking get it if you need to get out of a car. A little emergency help me whistle, some matches, some water. You know, it's like a little first aid kit, some emergency rations that apparently Kevin is a geek has tried out and said they taste like shit. 6 little pouches of water, a foil blanket, and a first aid kit. Fuck off. So yeah, you know, I really recommend against that. But thanks, Harlequin, for spotting it and sending it in. And it was on Australia eBay, I think. Well, it was eBay Australia. I mean, Jesus. I mean, this wouldn't keep you alive in the bush for a day in Australia. If you just had this, if you thought, oh, I'll be all right. You know, if you got rescued and you somehow had managed to survive with this survival kit, the Australian police would take the piss out of you. Endlessly. The entire 4-hour drive back to civilization, if you was lucky, would be punctuated by big beefy Australian men calling you a screamingly stupid pom. It's, I mean, if you, if, oh, it's all right, I had my zombie survival kit. they would give you a kick in probably for if that's all you took with you. So I'm astounded at eBay Australia. I mean, those people need to be, I bet they live somewhere shit in Australia. So, you know, insert own shit Australian town here. Juva also sent us a shed load of links for Hackaday, and I thoroughly recommend it. I'd say that is probably Recomedia. Hackaday.com, Hackaday. If you've not been there, Hackaday.com, and just go and look at all these nice little hacks on hardware mostly, and how to sort of like reroute otherwise useless bits of shit into doing something, to be fair, is probably equally as useless, but you've got it to do something that it wasn't supposed to. And also he sent us a link on how to survive a nuclear attack. surviving-history.blogspot.be, and talking about how survivable small scale, you know, 1 kiloton nuclear weapons can be. And that's again massively thanks to Juva, who he's going to be so angry. He's going to be sitting there on his internet, motherfucker, didn't use all my links. I didn't use anything like all of Juva's links. You won't believe the amount of stuff this guy's sending. He's our man of the match. He's the guy that we should all go, yep, nice one. The show was made possible by him. So this is where I want my Sesame Street linkage, because today's show was brought to you by Kevin is a Geek, Avagdu, Juva, Harlequin, and your humble host, V. And now we've got some outro music and stuff. So the show's still going to be slightly under an hour, but I'm getting better at this. I'm getting more into the flow of it. And it's just, I really have... I had to go and... this is the most pikey thing of all creation. And if you don't live in the UK, a pikey is someone that is a less than reputable travelling person. It's not like a Romany or a proper gypsy or anything like that. A pikey is the sort of person that owns a mobile home, destroys the land that he lives on, and then goes and fits people's patios or driveways. And that's where I was for 2 whole days last week, and that's what ate into my show recording time. I was sorting out my parents' patio in their back garden after they, for no good reason, believed some 18-year-old kid that had just been to a college course on construction that was going to sort out all their woes in their garden, and ended up leaving a fucking mess. I mean, literally anybody could have seen 15 seconds after he started working that this was not a person you should have anywhere near a concrete mixer or paving slabs, or just anywhere near you. This is someone that I would have just shot in the head. And to add insult to injury, he then dicked around with my dad's computer and made it impossible for him to connect to the internet by installing loads of antivirus and firewall system onto Windows, as if Windows needed more excuses to fuck up your internet connection via Google Chrome. So that was fantastically irritating. Anyway, so that's what I was doing. It's been a good show. Thank you very much for listening if you're there. The outro music is Valentina by Lucy Nisley, which I've got a horrible suspicion I've actually played before, and a nice piece of audio from Kevin is a Geek called Cassette Boy, featuring David Cameron, who is our current Prime Minister in the 1984 George Orwellian type thing of living in the UK. So we're going to play out with that. Thank you very much for listening. As always, next week's show will be a lot better. Now, I will try and make sure it's next week, and hopefully we'll have some audio of Graffin talking about all sorts of things. So we're going to get on with that. You take care. Thanks for listening. I've been V. This has been Rangers Radio on the 9th of April 2013. Take care, y'all.
Atmosphere, they'll free you through the night. Your light. tell you a story. It goes like this. Just think in your mind's eye about the 14-year-old David Cameron. Picture the scene. Today is a school day. The sun shining in. In his private school, George Osborne would hit people hard because he hates the poor, the weak, and the vulnerable. Meanwhile,
I went to my local comprehensive to stroke the dinner ladies, and even I find it depressing.
Imagine if that was you. Ed Miliband has the face of an ostrich.
This face is not something I chose. Wallace from Wallace and Gromit.
That is my face. But don't let that put you off just for a minute. I want to tell you my story. 14-year-old. David Cameron's not going to school. He drank two whole bottles of brandy.
1967 brandy.
And then what did he do?
I would score a line from drug dealers, play computer games all day, and beat off in my childhood bedroom.
Next.
The knock at the door.
I was standing on the doorstep. What do you find? David Cameron lurking in the shadows, his package exposed,
with a pound coin stuck to it. And Nate Clegg said, my God, it's much worse than I thought. But,
yes? I knew it would be hard. If you can make it big, all credit to you.
In British politics today, the size of our members is really massive. Unless, of course, you're called Ed Miliband or you're a member of the Labour Party.
Don't believe him.
It goes much, much wider and bigger than that. I know that you can't see it or feel it right now.
That's Nick Clegg's job.
I felt it. And that takes a certain kind of character.
It's an experience I will never forget. Nick Clegg and I rubbing along together, flat out, which is a pretty remarkable sight. Come on, let's pull together. Let's come together.
No, I think it's the answer. In the end, David Cameron came first and loudest.
I really am very, very sorry, but I have the heaviest balls. And let me tell you, I was so long in coming, it was uncomfortable.
David Cameron made a rotten mess.
I'll just leave it for the council to clear it up.
L-O-L.
Well, I feel much better for that, and I hope I hope it was therapeutic for you as well.